You're listening to The Caregiver's Corner, your trusted source for advice and insight for navigating the journey of aging and caregiving. Our podcast focuses on many of the questions, concerns, trends, and struggles older adults and caregivers face each day. Enjoy and learn from various contributors and guests with topics such as dementia, caregiving, end-of-life decisions, aging resources, and more. Thanks for tuning in, and here's your host, Matt Gallardo.
Hello, and welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast on SoundCloud, Apple Podcast, Google Play Music, and now on Spotify. Thank you so much for tuning in, and don't forget to click the subscribe button. Now, before we jump into today's podcast, I want to thank all of our listeners for choosing the Coach's Corner to gain insight and guidance on aging and caregiving topics for the last 3 years. Honestly, the subject matter that we cover isn't by any stretch entertaining, funny, or always upbeat. But what we do cover has helped lots of people struggling with issues like dementia, caregiving stress, and even end-of-life decision-making. We've provided guidance on different types of in-home and facility-based care and resources and financial assistance for older adults. We've helped to clarify what's what in long-term care and tackled conversations about downsizing, giving up driving, and even the right to make poor decisions. The topics we focus on are based on the questions, concerns, trends, and issues that I've counseled older adults and family members on for the last 20 plus years. You, like them, don't listen for the entertainment value. You tune in for some friendly advice, a place to turn if you or a loved one is struggling on the journey of aging, or finally, a place where you can listen and simply exhale. Now, most of our listeners are from the United States, but we have many other listeners from places like Canada, Ireland, and even Russia. So a big hello and thanks goes out to Stockton, California, and here in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, for being our biggest group of listeners. We really appreciate your support. So why the deep reflection? Well, I wanted to share that we are revamping the podcast a bit. The content and topics will largely remain the same, which really is the most important part of this broadcast. But we are, however, changing the name from the Coach's Corner to the Caregiver's Corner. This new name will hopefully draw more listeners based on the fact that most that listen are caregivers, and many of the topics we talk about revolve around caregiving. So, speaking of caregiving, let's move on to today's topic. We will be discussing the book, What to Do About Mama. And with me today is co-author Barb Matthews. Welcome, Barb.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show.
Well, thank you again for calling into the podcast as we continue practicing our social distancing in the age of COVID-19. So I read What to Do About Mama a few years back, and it's such an important book for caregivers to get their hands on. Co-authors Barbara Matthews, along with the other Barbara Train and Blank, open their hearts and bare their souls to share their challenging, heart-wrenching, and insightful journeys as caregivers. Their personal stories, along with hosts of other caregiving contributors, give detailed perspective on the physical, mental, and emotional roller coaster that caregiving entails. So, Barb, tell us a little bit about your story that I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to, and why you and Barb Blank decided to write this book.
Well, Matt, I was the primary caregiver for my mother-in-law, which is a little bit unusual, but certainly not unheard of. And like most caregivers, I waited in, my husband and I, we waited in gradually until that changed dramatically after the crisis moment occurred. My mother-in-law had been living for a number of years in Florida alone after my father-in-law passed away. And her children got to the point that they felt she was no longer safe living in that environment alone. Mm-hmm. Took a while, but we all convinced her that she should move to Pennsylvania near us. And she moved into a supportive independent living retirement facility near our home. And we did minor things for her, like take her shopping or to church, have her over on the weekends for sports on the TV and dinner. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was working at the Area Agency on Aging. I was an assessor, and I would go to people's homes and administer this really comprehensive assessment that determined clients' needs and their eligibilities for services. And I saw firsthand what the challenges were for seniors and their caregivers.
I'm sure.
Yeah. After about 2 years, my mother-in-law began to have falls that required a cycle of emergency room visits, hospitalizations, and extensive rehabilitation. And my own life began to revolve around the issues of aging, both on the job and off the job. The solution became for me to quit my job so that my mother-in-law could move into our home and I would be her full-time caregiver. She was stabilized under my care for a couple of years, and we had a couple of real good years, actually. And then her health began to decline rapidly again. It was at that time that I joined a caregiver support group that was run by our local hospice. And as a support group member, I agreed to be interviewed for a magazine article about support groups. And that article was written by Barb Blank. Not too long after that, my mother-in-law passed away. I'd been keeping a journal, a caregiving journal, which one of the group leaders had recommended as a technique to deal with stress. I also had a lot of emailed letters that my husband and I had written to his siblings when we were trying to deal with the escalating needs of our caregiving situation. So I'm cleaning things out and I think, I have all this stuff. What am I going to do with it? Mm-hmm. So I contacted Barb Blank, and she was deeply involved in her own caregiving situation that was quite a challenge. It was a long-distance caregiving situation. I asked her if she'd be interested in co-authoring a book, and she was intrigued with the idea. And it was that point that What to Do About Mama was born.
Hmm. That's a very interesting story, and quite often, as I hear, daughters or even daughter-in-laws tend to be the primary caregivers. So the experiences that you have and everything that you do as a caregiver, I'm sure was very fresh in your mind. So as I said a few moments ago, I read the book a few years ago, but now you have released a second edition. Tell us, what's a little bit different about this new version, or what's in the new version?
Well, I'm happy with the fact that the second edition is closer to what I originally had in mind. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy with the changes that have been made. It's been changed from front to back. It has a new cover. The cover is understated. There's only the title and the authors. And then there's a photograph of an elderly woman, and her demeanor speaks emotional volumes. Mm-hmm. And the emotions are a central focus of the book. And caregiving is just fraught with emotions, which I think
sure,
and everybody else out there who does it realizes that too. Especially during this time of coronavirus, when there's a whole new set of limitations and restrictions, and makes caregiving really, really frustrating, and not just frustrating, but fear, there's so much fear involved with that now, I think.
Yeah, and I think one of the things for caregivers that's important that you talk about is, you know, doing things for yourself and getting out and about. Well, as you said, with coronavirus, that really puts a damper on that to recharge your battery. People are limited in what they can do. So
right, and of course, the person that's receiving care, I mean, they're very restricted in what they can do. And I think the most upsetting thought is that when somebody gets coronavirus, that they go to the hospital and you don't see them, you know, you cannot see them in person or touch them again. And that just, you know, in fact, I need to stop talking about that because I'll start crying on your show. I find that really disturbing. So, The subtitle of the book was changed. It's now Expectations and Realities of Caregiving. And I think that just wraps it up real well as far as what's in the book is concerned. In the first edition of What to Do About Mama, all the caregiving stories were interspersed throughout the manuscript, being placed, you know, in areas where they are a good example of whatever point is being made. And there's still, what I did was I collected them all into one chapter, so they're in chapter 3, but they're still referenced at the appropriate place in the book. So one thing I didn't do, now that I've read the book from front to back for like, you know, at least the fourth or fifth time, what I realized I didn't do that I wish I had was preface that third chapter with the suggestion that people can read that whole chapter if they want to, or they can skip it initially and then read the stories as they turn up in the book. So that's kind of a personal preference there.
Well, maybe for the third edition.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's ever going to happen, Matt. Maybe another book. But let's see. We're talking about chapter 3. Side comments and information that I wanted originally to have in text boxes have now been put into text boxes. Mm-hmm. And that causes a lot less interruption to the flow of the narrative. And then another thing that one of my caregivers recommended was, he said, caregivers are busy. We need bullet point lists of what to do. So I put bullet points at the end of many of the chapters. That there's a caregiver checklist, and then there's a list of bullet point items of just a synopsis of what was in the chapter. So
I was a big fan of that. Great idea.
I think all of these changes made the book more user friendly. But the most important change was the addition of a new chapter. And the new chapter is called The Aftermath of Caregiving. And in this chapter, I've tried to stress the importance of caregiver education, whether you're a caregiver or you're what I call a pre-caregiver or a post-caregiver. People just don't often, they want to avoid this topic. So it's really important not to do that.
Well, and especially pre-caregivers, sometimes you're informing them of something they don't even realize yet. But, yeah. You know, if they have aging parents or other loved ones, they may not necessarily see the writing on the wall. So to have something this early on to look at, I think is great.
Well, you know, the funny thing is my kids were really quite involved in, and they were tremendously supportive when my mother-in-law lived with us. I could always count on them. It's not that they did, they did some caregiving. I mean, when I went to support group, my daughter would pick her up. I mean, those are kind of caregiving things, but they just spent a lot of time with her. They were really great. But after she passed away and I wrote this book, my one daughter said to me, "We don't need this yet, Mom." You know. Mm-hmm. Well, it was within 5 years that the other grandmas, you know, the mothers-in-law had passed away. And caregiving doesn't happen. There's no like, this is on the schedule to happen such and such a time,
right,
you know,
right.
It always comes in with a big bang, that you're not, you know, that you don't necessarily know is, yeah, I mean, we all know these things are going to happen, but we deny that they're going to happen soon. So we put everything off until later.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the beginning of the new chapter, there's four new stories that are representations of a younger population of caregivers. And I'm hoping that these stories will help younger folks to realize that it's never too early to be informed about caregiving. There's also a number of updates about the people in the book. That's particularly really poignant, you know. One story in there. This woman had written a caregiving story of her own, and well, she's now the person who has to be cared for, and in a very dramatic way. And I'm able to talk about how her caregiving. I mean, she's got 24-hour caregiving in the home, so that was quite a feat to get that established. And I was able to document all that, so it's pretty interesting. Most importantly, there's also. Yeah, the most important thing is to me as a baby boomer, I want my generation to realize that the only way that we can minimize the caregiving burden on our own children is that if we are proactive in preparing for future needs. And, that was in the kind of the kernel of what the last chapter is all about, is how to be prepared. Yeah. Caregiving is never going to be easy. It's always going to have surprises, but we can be better prepared.
Absolutely.
Yep.
You know, and unfortunately, if there is anything to take away from caregiving for a parent, is just as you said, you know, baby boomers or anyone that is aging themselves and becoming more dependent, is that they've gone through that once and they see how difficult it is, and they don't want to put their kids through that. So yeah, absolutely, being proactive and thinking ahead, it really can save your kids a lot of strife. And we really preach that here at Messiah.
Right. One thing that happens, I think, a lot is in trying to protect kids, our kids, a lot of older adults will just hide things from them. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they'll pretend these things don't exist.
Right.
And they're not protecting their kids because their kids worry about them, you know.
Right.
And that worry is very difficult.
They don't want to burden them. But like you said, if they hide things, the way they find out is when they get a phone call from the hospital at midnight or something like that,
right,
or EMS.
Right.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, another thing I really liked about the book is that it goes beyond caregiving in the here and now, and we talked about that a little bit. It examines the residual effects of caregiving even after a loved one has passed, including the emotional aspect, relationship between survivors that can be pretty difficult sometimes, and some of the legal and financial issues that linger after that person is gone. You know, again, it's not just for someone that's in that current situation. It also affirms its readers and lets them know that it's okay to make mistakes, to feel inadequate, or even feel guilty. Certainly, this book is great for current caregivers, but again, for those that have done it in the past or for those that will do it in the future, just a good read. And, you know, you and I have talked about this. I always say, if you care about someone, you will likely be a caregiver at some point in your life. So, again, this is a good, manuscript to go back to and just read through if you get to that point in your life.
I think that one of the biggest challenges regarding caregiving is that it's not something that people want to talk about. They don't want to think about it. Let's face it, caregiving is a bummer. It's all about loss. It's the loss of somebody's physical abilities or their cognitive abilities, or the loss of their independence, and ultimately it's the loss of life. Mm-hmm. So we get caught up in this vicious cycle of procrastination and denial, and we don't fully face what our needs are until we're in that crisis mode. Even the experts, I could give you some examples. I mean, I've started a new newsletter that I'm putting out and so forth, and I have a blog. But you know, you're supposed to sign up for newsletters through blogs. But I just sent, in fact, I believe you got it, Matt. Mm-hmm. I just sent out blanket emails to our newsletters to everybody that was anywhere in my email contact.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I noted that if you don't want this newsletter, you can opt out of it, which just a very few people did. But interestingly, some of the people opted out were either past caregivers, and they gave me the very typical comment, which I fully understand because I'm kind of in this stage myself. The comment is, I just want that to be in my past. So I don't want to think about caregiving. I understand that, but they will have something else come up again in some form in the future. The other interesting thing is some of the caregiving experts opted out of the newsletter for the same reason. And, you know, it's funny because they know, you know, they know they're going to have these needs, but they right. just need to be able to step away,
yeah.
which, you know, it's hard. It really is.
Hopefully they'll remember and when the time comes and they need the advice again. But yeah, I think for some people, especially if they've been caregiving for a long time and that person passes, for some, their reaction is to just step away from it completely and just take a breather. Now, I'm sure you have some examples, but I also know people that after their loved one passes, their way of grieving is helping other people that are just starting the process. And that's essentially what you did. But then also people who help run support groups, oftentimes they'll have participants come back after their loved one has passed away, and they will, again, really help those new caregivers through that
kind
journey.
Of like a mentor, yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the caregivers, one of the news stories in the last chapter is from a caregiver who sees this as her purpose in life, you know. Mm-hmm. So she's not a person that steps away from it. She
right.
she stays fully involved, even though her mother has passed away. But you know, she doesn't have children, and this is her way of, you know, using that innate sense of caring for people. And I met her at the gym, and if you know, sometimes when you're doing Zumba or something like that. For the senior Zumba, you know, somebody might fall, and boy, she's in there. She's the first one in there to help anybody that has a need. So I was pretty impressed with that.
So what essential tips or bits of advice would you give someone who's just starting on their caregiving journey with a loved one?
Yeah. Well, I think, is to follow some sort of process. I mean, you have to have a full family discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you should include your care receiver. You know, a lot of times we're talking behind their backs, and it's all about them. And it's better if they can be part of that discussion when you're making your plans. And when you're doing that, you have to keep your communication open, and you have to not just initially, but you have to communicate frequently and be able to express all the things. A lot of them are just feelings. Express those things, because when we stuff them away, then they're going to erupt somehow in probably a not so pleasant way down the line. You have to respect the caregiver's independence, because I think our ability to be independent is probably one of the very most important things to people that you don't want to give up. You need to discuss values. It's not the same for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
A big value choice is what's more important, somebody's autonomy, their independence, or is it their safety that's more important?
Right.
I don't think there's one answer to that. I think it depends on the individual and what they want.
And I think a lot of times adult children make those assumptions and don't come right out and ask their loved one. So it's important to communicate that for sure.
I had a fairly recent experience with my own family. Sometimes, you know, my family, my children understand me fairly well, I think, but that doesn't mean my children-in-law understand it, because they didn't grow up with me as a mother. You know, they sometimes don't know what to expect out of me. But we very much had that issue. I was offering up some information. You've probably heard of the Conversation Project,
mm-hmm.
Which is a questionnaire that you fill out so that you can. It asks those difficult questions that nobody wants to ask.
Yeah.
And you can write the answers, and you can do it privately, and then that can open up that discussion. So when his mother became ill, I gave that to him, and he looked at it and saw some terminology, you know, that was not, he was not ready to face. So it did cause a problem. I guess I didn't handle it too well, but, you know, it did cause a problem, but in the end, it, you know, they didn't, he never read it. And I think that if they had done something like that, they might've had a little bit, I mean, you know, people getting sick and dying is hard no matter what, but it might've been a little smoother ride. I don't know. Another thing is that you need to consider and explore a wide variety of options. When it comes to caregiving needs, there's all kinds of models. I mean, there's the CCRC model like you are involved with, and there's the bring your loved one to live with you in your home, which is what I did. But then there's, you know, plenty of other things, getting help into the home, and you know, lots of options are available. So you need to consider all of the things.
And do your homework.
Yeah, exactly. And then you need to have realistic, this part of that title, you have to have realistic expectations of yourself. Caregivers tend to be people who want to get in there and fix things. And, you know, they underestimate how difficult it will get. They underestimate how long. I think that was a factor for me, how long it can go on.
Well, I think another good example of coronavirus, I think in the beginning, lots of people were ready to say, okay, I'm going to do what I need to do. And it's been going on longer and longer and longer. So you have to really pace yourself for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely get worn down. So you have to have realistic expectations, and not just of yourself, but of the other people. I mean, I had expectations of how my in-laws were going to come and visit more frequently than they did, you know. Well, that was my expectation, but maybe it was just unrealistic, you know. So those are the kinds of things you have to look at. And don't make assumptions of what other people are going to do. You need to get everybody talking about it and pin down on it, because if you're going to assume something and it doesn't happen that way, then you just set yourself up for disappointment. And what I think, I mean, I think you'll get a lot of people that say, oh, that won't work. And I don't know, but I think it's important to, when you're talking and making these plans, I think it's important to get it down in writing specifically.
Absolutely.
A contract of expectations and commitments. You know, what are you going, you bring everybody's strengths to the table. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And you get it all spelled out, and you all have to sign it saying, yes, I understand it, I agree to it, and we're going to do this, and you date it. And it's important to date it, because things will change. You have to have a mechanism for making changes as you go along, because the needs are going to change. So you date it, and you've got that. Well, you know, here it is. This is what we agreed on.
In black and white. Yeah, I've seen that personally and professionally, where you have multiple family members that in the beginning say, okay, yes, I'm going to do these days and you do those days. And then a few weeks, few months go by, and that sibling or other person all of a sudden isn't showing up and doing their part. And I think you're right. Having it in writing, having, you know, even a contract, really keeps people accountable and keeps them on task.
Yeah, it's the accountability that's hitting the nail on the head there. Yeah, it was interesting. I read an article once. I'm going to forget the three things, but there's three things in the article that families use as excuses. One is, I can't stand to see my mother like this.
Yeah.
Another one is, you don't understand my job. My job gets in the way and interferes.
Yeah.
And I think the third one had to do with money. And it was just interesting. Yeah. They were the three top excuses for why people don't get involved in their caregiving as much as you expected they would. And I got to say, looking back at it, my husband's family, at one time or another, all those excuses were in there. And they all were. So,
yeah, it's unfortunate. Well, you know, as both you and Barb Blank expressed, this book is not a caregiving textbook. And it wasn't written by, quote, caregiving experts, but really you see it as a guide featuring a collection of experiences and insights for caregivers by caregivers, which I think is always helpful. It really provides real world scenarios, anecdotes, and support to those in the position of caregiver. And that's an important part too, is to understand that you are a caregiver. You're not just a family member or, you know, a spouse who made a promise. Caregiving is a true occupation, if you will. And so it really requires, you know, reading books, studying, you know, writing things down, having contracts. It's not just, oh, well, I'm here, I better do it. Mm-hmm. It also tells the tale of what to do. And also what not to do, or what worked or what didn't work, or what could work for you. So it's really valuable, again, to learn from other caregivers that have walked in those shoes. And I really recommend this book. And if you could share, where can the listeners buy a copy?
Well, Sunbury Press is the publisher, and you can buy it through them. And then, of course, Amazon. And yeah. Amazon's probably the way to go.
Pretty much get anything there, huh?
Yeah. Overnight. Well, Barb,
yeah, I will put a link on the show notes with both of those options to purchase.
Oh, man, and I'd like to ask a little request. If somebody reads the book, I would appreciate it very much if they would, what's the word I want? I guess they use the word recommendations. They can be good or bad, right?
Yeah.
But if they would take the time to say what they liked or didn't like about the book, that would be very helpful, and I would appreciate it.
Yes, up to 5 stars. So yeah, that would be great for those that order it.
Yeah.
Well, Barb, thank you so much for being my guest today, and again, doing this long distance. It's really good to talk with you, and we greatly appreciate your time and really appreciate the release of What to Do About Mama, the second edition. Again, we all need to read and appreciate the trials, tribulations, and triumphs of others, especially now in our current environment, which we're living in. So, you know, reach out and get this book, and want to thank everyone for listening, and stay tuned for some few changes with the Coach's Corner. Again, thanks for listening, and until next time, stay safe and be well and age well.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please be sure to subscribe to the Caregiver's Corner and never miss an episode. Or if you have an idea or a topic you'd like us to cover, please contact us at area code 717-591-7225. Thanks again for listening.